About a couple of days ago, I spoke to a lady in the US who had watched the videos, read some books, and has a teacher in the US, has two teachers in the US, and one of them is a Bhagavad Gita teacher. Now, she has been ill for a few years since COVID-related illness, which has compromised her functioning in life. So since she is unable to work, there's a lot of time to contemplate, introspect, work on oneself, work on the ego, and so on. Also, this belief that if I am ill physically, it means my mind is not okay because it is the mind which creates the illness. Now, this teaching actually has a different perspective. This is really not a teaching about working on oneself as such, but rather allowing the teaching to work through oneself. Otherwise, it becomes a control device of the ego. I must work on my flaws. I must improve myself. I must destroy my ego. So this teaching would say, if that is the case, who is the one saying this? If you want to destroy your ego, or let's say a master comes and tells you, annihilate the ego, destroy the ego, and you say, I must now destroy my ego. Who is saying it? It is the ego saying it itself. Now, because there's something else I can do, because the ego loves to do, now I am going to put in my best efforts to make myself a better person. It is not wrong, because the intent is pure. But what this teaching says is, turn the perspective around. Just see yourself and the people you meet in your life as being precisely the way God made them. When that starts happening, one finds that by and by one is witnessing more and more in life. Witnessing. Sakshi Bhav, witness consciousness. When I have no intention to correct what I think is wrong about someone or something in that sense, that constant need to dominate and control a situation, that starts dropping away. When you realize I don't have to win each and every argument, I don't have to thrust my point of view on others, maybe I can share it. If they don't accept it, I keep quiet. I don't have this need to force it on someone else now. When these changes start happening in our human relationships, we understand that our perspective on life has changed. Someone had come to my teacher, and when he asked him, what do you want most in life? Eventually, my teacher would come down to peace of mind. Whether you know it or not, you want peace of mind. So people would use big words. I want self-realization, I want enlightenment, I want whatever. What will that do for you when you get it? So he would bring it down to peace of mind. This boy came once and said, I don't even understand what peace of mind is, but all I want is to be comfortable with others and to be comfortable with myself. That's all I want. And he was so impressed by the simplicity of this statement that my teacher started using this sentence in his own teachings. And then he went a step further. He said, this teaching shows you how not to be uncomfortable with someone and yourself. When that is resolved, you're comfortable. Niti, the negative way. When I remove the thorns which are pricking you of what people said to you and did to you, when those are pulled out, you are no longer uncomfortable. That is what the teaching does. And in the talk I gave at Ramana Kendra, Delhi recently, I said that one sentence of Ramana Maharshi, which for me ended any doubt whether peace of mind was the main thing, was when I read in the book, in talk 146 or 145, I'm not sure, where he says, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. Bus. Nothing else. The state of equanimity. I read an an article on the net where Robert Adams said that Ramana Maharshi said, to be calm is the greatest siddhi. To be calm is the greatest siddhi. Because when you are calm, you are plugged in into the silence. Because your thinking mind is not functioning. And the thinking mind is the me and my story. No me and my story, what is left is silence. The deep peace of silence. So, coming back to that lady, she was quite amazed. And she started laughing. She said, this is just what I needed. I was working too hard on myself. Because that takes away the peace even more. Life is short. Why not see it for what it is? The way the Creator has made it. Life is short. Instead of trying to change people, change oneself, change this, change that, why not accept it the way it is? When someone asked Rameshji to give the shortest possible definition of God, he said, God is what is. That's it. Not what should be and not what should have been. God is what is. Can what is be apart from God? If God is all-powerful, all-knowing, all-merciful, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, God is what is. So the next time someone comes in front of you, who you have a history with of conflict, this statement, God is what is, presents itself to you. You have a situation now. Now your energies are focused on how to deal with it, not to battle it. Not to say this is wrong, you are wrong. Those battles are over now. The battle of wrong and right is finished. Nobody is wrong, nobody is right. We are no longer polarized on that dimension anymore. Trying to convince someone else. So what happens is, we are no longer seeing the person through the eyes of duality. Now buddhi has started operating. Now we are seeing through the single eye. Because that drama we would get sucked in of doership, blame, condemnation, ill will is finished. But I still have to deal with the person I don't like. That has not gone away. But now I am open, receptive and able to respond to the person. Earlier, it was a knee-jerk reaction. I was always being triggered, unconsciously triggered by past patterns, past history. And so on and so forth. Now a new dimension opens up. Now the possibility is there that the relationship can get transformed. And if not, because I no longer hold this person accountable as an individual for doing something to me, I have a total acceptance that this is the divine play of God. I still do what I have to, but I find the words I use have changed. The things I say differently. That starts happening. Which means I am more and more calm. I am at peace with what is. Joel Goldsmith said in his early days when he didn't realize he had the healing gift, someone would come to him and get cured without his knowing it. And he thought that I have not done anything. I didn't even have the intent to heal this person. But the person got cured. So he self-investigated, what is this? And he realized for himself that the presence of God was so strong for him that when a person came, the name of the person was irrelevant, the form of the person was irrelevant. If the person said, I have this money problem or this disease, irrelevant. Because he was immersed in just the presence of pure consciousness. Then he realized, I didn't do the healing. It is that which healed. I didn't do it. That pure presence, as he said, the person came into his field of consciousness. That is all that was required. The rest was irrelevant. And that which was being transmitted through him did the healing. Which means his mind was not immersed in the mundane world like ours is. And if it is not as immersed and as attached to the happenings in life, it is calm. And being calm is the greatest siddhi. That is why Maharaj said, it is not what you do, but what you stop doing that matters. What you do is irrelevant. What you stop doing, that is what matters. And someone took this a step ahead. This lady, she put a big sign in her living room. You know the parking signs like those? Red one. And in white, the lettering, stop it, exclamation mark. It was there in front of her when she was sitting. Decided to do this herself. So every time she found that a thought came up of blame or doership, saw that and it stopped. Saw that and it stopped. Saw that and it stopped. And she said it worked so brilliantly for her that by and by, her mind got deconditioned from the old habits. Her mantra became not Om Namah Shivaya, but stop it. She would tell herself, she said, I would tell myself, stop this nonsense. Stop this way of thinking. Otherwise, you keep playing this action-reaction loop all your life with people. And you can't get away from people. So this teaching brings you to a point of peace with the present moment. You also find some subtle changes, like you're not hurrying like you used to. Because people who hurry are hurrying into an imaginary future. You may find these subtle changes happening. You are more at ease. Your body is more at ease. You are more at ease with what is. Then even if someone triggers you in the moment, it may appear that you lose your center, but immediately you again settle back into a pace, a place of equipoise. Then over time you find that your one foot is always on the ground of silence while you are conducting your daily activities, because you are grounded in being. You see, the whole problem is this ego was not created by us. It was created by God, and we are setting out to destroy it or correct it. See, the baby, when it realized, when it figured out that if I cry, my mother comes running. Of course, it doesn't know mother, doesn't know, there are no labels. But it has figured out what was pure being first has now, something has set in which shows that I am separate. If something happens here, someone comes running. So what was pure is now getting localized. Now I realize I'm separate from what I see. Then the journey of the ego begins. And then the ego is afraid. The journey of ego is the journey of fear. Now I must survive. Because prior to the ego, pure being was not concerned with survival. It was pure being. The baby in the cot had no concept of survival. The universe provides the baby with food, mother's milk. All is well. But now this is there. I'm a separate unit. I'm a separate entity. And now I must survive. Because if I don't survive, I will die. One small example. I was talking to a friend who's a therapist. And we were discussing people who speak very fast. Some people speak very fast. And I had the understanding that there could be various reasons for it. Therapy is very good to actually analyze all this. One was that a child, especially if they have siblings, is afraid that if I don't say what I want to say, my parent will not look at me. So I must say fast, 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 so I have the attention of the parent, and then I am there. Then the therapist explained parallels to this. What happens? Why do children talk fast? Why do children stammer? And so on. But the conclusion is it is all fear-based. The ego now devises techniques because it's so afraid to die. To die means what? I'm afraid not to be, not to be acknowledged. Then it develops into not to be acknowledged for who I am. So there's a lot of fear. If I don't have the other person's attention, I will die. Now my job is to get your attention. Look at me. The ego starts screaming, look at me, look at me. The Buddhists were quite right. All fear culminates to the fear of death, death of the me. So our life is one where fear dominates because the ego is built on the foundation of fear. So there's no point in saying, I should be less fearful. Then you start figuring out how to be less fearful. But rather, just see the play of life. See the functioning of the ego for what it is. Then when fear arises, even that is witnessed, when not even the slightest intent to dissolve the fear, it is witnessed as a natural part of the functioning of the ego which wants to survive. So it is that same witnessing quality which creates a gap between the fear and observing it, not being consumed by it. So this teaching is not going to say, be less fearful, beta, be positive. No, it is going to expose the ego and its functioning. That is what it does. Because the more and more it exposes, the more and more pure being starts shining through. And you find one day you're sitting at home by yourself, having your chai or coffee or whatever it is. And you're so happy. Nothing has to happen to be happy. Enjoying yourself. Then when you feel, okay, let me go for a walk, you go for a walk. That is what is referred to as sukha shanti. When I find someone troubled me in the morning, but at 4 p.m. I'm sitting enjoying my chai, not thinking about that person who troubled me, how dare he have done that to me, I'm going to get back to him. It happened. Now I'm having my chai at 4 p.m. I'm very happy to just be, because my thinking mind is not doing the cartwheels anymore. But if I'm having my chai and that is going on and on and on and on, then no sukha shanti, then only dukha. Then I am myself a vibration of sadness. And if someone else comes in front of me at 4 p.m. joyfully, and that is what is going on in my mind, I am not present for this other child of God, because I'm lost in the past. What happened in the morning? I mean, imagine if you went to God at 4 p.m. and God said, Beta, actually something bothers me from the morning. I'm thinking about that. I can't be with you now. God is pure consciousness, pure being. It's not going to say that, because it embraces what is, accepts it, is not selective. Like someone once told me, a lawyer, that half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the evening, I tell my family, my office, don't disturb me. And I'm very content and happy. And I tell themselves, rest of the time, disturb me. I said, what kind of life is that? Your 24 hours is reduced to 1 hour of peace because you don't want to be disturbed by the world. The sage does not function that way. For the sage, his peace is being not only found but established moment to moment throughout the day, especially when things go wrong. That is the greatest test, and things will go wrong.
We had a point about the working mind and the thinking mind. Can you elaborate? Because the working mind is the healthy mind.
Yes.
The thinking mind is the unhealthy mind, I imagine.
Yes.
Can you just speak 3 lines on this working mind and the thinking mind? How is working mind better being in the present?
You see, my teacher gave one example all the time, that there's a surgeon. He has to perform a surgery. Now, all his years of experience are going to be with him when he's performing this surgery. So he is in the working mind. His experience is there. The patient is there. Surgery is to be performed. But supposing that morning, the head of the hospital gives him a call and says, hey, look here, I'm just cautioning you that the person you're operating on is very well connected, can pull a lot of strings. And if, God forbid, something goes wrong with this surgery, we are going to be in trouble, so please take care. Now, yes, now while he's performing the surgery, this dialogue, this thought comes into his mind, my God, I better be careful. It was not there before this phone call. Now the mind is creating an imaginary future. What if? And suddenly he finds all his expertise is getting compromised because the mind is starting to run. So the working mind has now switched to the thinking mind, which is in an imaginary future. And therefore, he is not fully present for the surgery. So this is the difference. And we find that our mind mostly is in the thinking mind mode. Mostly. Now, artists, they are in the working mind mode because they are lost in their work. They are lost to the world. You see, there's the left brain and the right brain. The left brain is analytical and fear-based. We have a very nicely developed left brain, all of us. And the creative brain is compromised.
Creative brain, right?
Yeah. the intuitive brain, you know. Now, even intuition, which is actually very natural to be intuitive, but because our analytical mind, which is so fear-based and always calculating, figuring things out, figuring people out, saying if I buy this stock, then 5 weeks later, it should be this much, should be that much, all that is the left brain thinking, right? So it dominates so much that what is this intuitive mind has no space left. So we find that our mind is thinking mind dominated. The sage's mind is either working mind dominated. That is why you see how they were able to run ashrams looked quite effortless, but it's the working mind which is engaged. Or then when the working mind is not engaged, resting in pure being. But we average humans can't rest in pure being. We want to be engaged all the time. What should we do? I don't want to sit just like that. Now what can I do? So the sage is, when he is working, working mind, not working, no mind state in that sense. Yeah, witnessing, you could call it. But we are obsessed with the thinking mind. That is why we don't get sleep at night. Our mind is going on and on and on and on, thinking mind. That is why there was a nice saying of Krishnamurti. He said, I don't mind what happens. I don't mind what happens. I'm okay with it.
What's a secret?
Here today, gone tomorrow. Do you know that about yourself? Or you assume you'll be here tomorrow? You know, the thinking mind can be such a nuisance. A friend of mine called me. She said she was getting a cold every month. She never used to fall sick. But getting a cold every month, then she sprained one toe slightly and all that. So she said, you know, I am wondering if black magic was done on me. I said, huh? I said, why are you thinking that? I said, why are you thinking that? She said, because I went to Assam, so maybe I upset someone there or something. So I said, see, firstly, if it is true, then the black magician is not that powerful if he's just giving you colds. You should be okay with it. But I said, be reasonable, you know, build up your immunity, go to the doctor. And if it's still bothering you, and if you do feel, honor that and speak to some temple priest, ki kuch puja karo, whatever it is, I don't know because I have no experience in this. Settle your mind that way. But rather than going on and on now this thing, colds, black magic, cold. So the thinking mind does that. It takes away your peace, absolutely takes away and destroys your peace. And it's trying to find cause-effect relationships to everything. Ye hua kyunki wo hua. That is why my teacher would say the biggest joke is, we think A leads to B, B leads to C, C leads to D. But the truth is that for D to happen, C had to happen, and for C to happen, B had to happen. When you start looking at life in this reverse direction, then you really see how it reveals itself. I don't know if I mentioned this example of someone when traveling, they don't lock their suitcase. They don't put a lock. I thought this person is very evolved. I said, I've never seen a lock on your suitcase. It means you trust the universe, right? You trust that your belongings will not go. Yes, yes, yes. Very happy. Then later on, she told me, she said, once when I was traveling 20 years ago, we were in the US and our bags were picked out and we were told to open them. And I forgot the combination. And she said, my husband abused me and fired me so much in front of the officers that I swore that from that day on, I will not lock my bag. So you see, this thinking mind, because this experience happened, this event happened, which left trauma in the psyche. So it concluded, I don't want to take a chance to have this trauma again, so I will not lock my bag. That is the thinking mind, because it starts now seeing everything from that experience onwards. Everything gets viewed that way, because it got stuck in that moment. This happened to me in the past. I will now try my best to prevent it from happening to me in the future. I've got stuck in the story. That is how the ego operates, out of fear. Talking of surgeons, there's that joke where the surgeon tells the patient before the anesthesia, don't worry, David, it will be okay. So the patient gets frightened, said, my name is not David. So the surgeon said, no, my name is David. He was telling himself. Would anyone like to share anything? Maybe if someone else first wants the chance and then. Sure.
Okay, I first came to Gautam Sachdeva, as I clearly remember, on 5th of February, it was a Sunday. And after a long hunt for spirituality, I mentioned to you and the whole group about a visitation I may or may not have had. And on the 5th of February, first, then I logged on to your YouTube and I started following and I came. 5th of February, I came here, I was very excited with this newfound spirituality. I made a 15-minute speech in this hall and I was talking a lot about how it has changed me, transformed me. Now the transformation is totally silent. The excitement is gone.
Mm.
That newfound, like a baby with a new toy, loves it. And that's 5th Feb, 5th April, 5th March, March, April, May, 3 months. So that excitement, the beautiful part about this understanding, I feel, it's my opinion, is it works very silently. And it's the simplest thing. You make a comment about something being, if it was difficult, everybody would get it.
Mm.
It is so simple to check yourself when you're losing it, your sense of peace. It is so simple that I practiced it probably 2-3 weeks, corrected, self-check, and now it's automatic mode. I don't have to even, I unconsciously self-check. So that excitement was there when I got this understanding, and now it is a understanding of maintaining your balance, your peace of mind, very, very silently. Just be in the moment. When the clock moves another second, that's the next moment. So I live it, keep it very simple. And it's, I found it very beneficial. And what is the beauty of it is it has moved around my house to my children and everybody. To my friends, they say, you're different. What's happened to you? Where's the gregarious? Where is all that?
Mm.
Just remain shant, calm. Everything is okay. It's happening.
Do they find you boring now? Because no, that happens also.
You're right. I'll admit. At that party, where is that fun, Sunil Bhan, gone, you know, that kind of thing. I'm there in the moment. I love, praise the food, enjoy. Have a beer. I have the same meat, but talk less. I listen more.
Mm-hmm.
And don't judge anybody.
That's beautiful.
When the party is over, leave.
Yeah. You don't have to wait for it to get
over. Not even that. You don't have to do anything special to be in this understanding of Advaita. There's no attempt, there's no effort.
Yes.
You just be there and see the second keeps, hand keeps ticking and you're there in the next moment, then you're in the next moment, then you're in the next moment and go to sleep in the night. So it's done me a lot of good and it's done my family and few friends I've spoken to about this. They've also logged on to Gautam Sachdeva on YouTube. So let's see where it takes them as their destiny. My destiny is mine.
Exactly.
So,
and as you so rightly said, that, you know, eventually it settles into a silence.
Absolutely, absolute silence. There's no temperament, there's no excitement, there's no emotion. You just remain in. If I'm sitting on my chair, sipping my coffee, I'm enjoying my coffee. If I'm at my work desk, my focus is on designing pressure vessels, direction. So, everything is okay. It's just okay. Nothing is a big deal.
Right. And even when it's not okay, it's okay.
When you get disturbed, I'm telling you, it took me just a month and a half if I got disturbed about something. So time kept reducing for my coming back to take off.
Exactly. Exactly. That becomes faster and faster.
Time period reduces and now it's automatic.
Yeah.
That disturbed sensation arises and dies in that second.
Yes.
So it's been beneficial. I wanted to share that.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. As rightly mentioned on continuation on that part, Even my experience has been so that, and I believe that this teaching is been working on many, and everybody has been experiencing this awakening. But what I have experienced that once the awakening has happened, then after it's a total different journey, and there are many ups and downs related to the disorientation and many phases wherein a person may not be able to understand like what is happening, and may not be able to figure out like where I am heading towards, because the old self comes again and maybe having some questions or doubts. So I would just request if post awakening journey, if like anything can be
sure. So you're talking about yourself.
Yeah, I have experienced that having this awakening experience, then after also there is a journey which, you know,
yes,
towards progress, and
sure
there are lot many phases where sometime a disorientation experience is there, sometime it's like, usually in general it's like on the background it's peace of mind, it's always there. Earlier it was like lost found, but then it happened like it's always there in background, but then too like in front it's like it's happening, sometime it's disorienting, sometime it's like it feels like, you know, I'm again like how I was like 5 years back,
sure,
but then after 2 days it's like the background, the peace of mind is like illuminating.
Yes, so this is very natural. You see, this is called the process of the flip-flop. Because what has happened after awakening, and what is awakening? Let's say awakening to a new understanding, like in his case, right? But the old self, which that hardwired conditioning, also you see your environment reinforces your conditioning. So if you've had family members since day one, siblings, parents and all that, they are working on you as if you're the old self. They are not seeing the awakening. So this flip-flop happens because the conditioning is so encrusted and hardwired. So I see the light, I go back. I see the light, I go back, because I'm now in between two worlds, so to speak. So that is going to happen. But now that you said that there is in the background peace of mind, then the knowing is there that this is a process in time, and by it will keep evolving till the time I am able to drive my car on the road through heavy traffic and be at peace. Till then, I'm navigating. I've learned how to drive. The awakening has given me the driving license. That all that bothered me earlier is falling away like a house of cards. The awakening gave me that, but I'm still hardwired conditioning. And the people I'm working with and living with are hardwired conditioning also. So it's not easy. I'm going like this, like this, like this. That is me driving my car now with my awakening license. And it is only 2 years later from today, or maybe 1 year, maybe 3 years, we don't know, that I look back and say, my God, even that process I went through. And then you know that when I find my day is one of peace by and by, then I have got deliverance. Awakening and deliverance were Zen concepts. What my teacher would say is awakening means getting the driving license. It doesn't mean you're a pro on the road the next day. It's going to take practice. Awakening means getting the driving license. Something has clicked. Wow, new way of being. And driving through traffic day by day, day by day, day by day, till you're driving on the same road one day and you see, my God, I was at peace. It didn't bother me, honking didn't bother me, traffic didn't. Then I know I have been delivered by the teaching. And what has been delivered? Unbroken peace of mind. So it's a process, this disorientation you're talking about. But one has to be thankful to God that even that much peace of mind is there. What about those who don't have even that? You see, the whole focus goes on to when I am disoriented. That is how the ego works. The focus is that. Not what I received as a gift.
I could call myself fortunate. 3-4 months I was able to settle down into understanding so deeply. At an initial period in February, I was losing my cool, unnecessarily, slowly introduced. Oh, why did I do that? What did I need to?
Sure.
Why did I shout at my engineer? Poor guy, even he is a man of God. He's trying his best. So he made a little mistake in the design. And it's got into my blood then completely.
It is absolutely right. This teaching goes into your blood. It does do that.
So at the time of disorientation, there is a knowing that it's happening. And it's like if anything can be done to, you know, to minimize it. Or
try it. Try your best, knowing the results are not in your control.
Try what I said. I really do need to lose my fingers. Analyze it a bit and it becomes a habit. That's what happened to me. Try it. Maximum we have to keep on trying.
What more difficult is when people around you don't accept the new you. You see, because then again the fear of survival comes up for you. In what sense? That people will say you become boring or you're not so interested in what we say anymore. Then you feel something's wrong with me now. See, the ego keeps focusing on itself. It can't get away from that.
So in my case, it was earlier to awakening. Earlier to awakening, I was like very much concerned about people mentioning and labeling me as a boring and antisocial person.
And I used to think that I am very different from others and I am not like how I should be. But now I realize that it's okay. Means it's normal, which I used to think earlier I am abnormal. So now it's not like that. So
now you think you're normal and they think you're abnormal.
So yeah. So now it's like it's not with me that, you know, after awakening the people are labeling me boring because
you're already boring.
Yeah, it's been from the starting only. But I have now accepted for myself that it's normal. And it's not like boring or means it's just a label which the society gives you.
I feel I was boring before awakening and after awakening. No change.
There's a phrase my youngest son uses. Whatever rocks your boat.
Whatever?
Rocks your boat.
Rocks your boat. Whatever floats your boat.
Floats your boat. Whatever floats your boat, keeps you afloat.
Yeah.
Everything is fine.
Yeah. But does he practice that?
Yeah.
Very good.
Can I add?
Sure.
Actually, what he spoke about is, I think, everyone's experience, including myself. So sometimes, probably, I ask, there is something in me who is asking this question, is still looking for something. So there is a desire to remain at calm and at peace at every time. And that desire is striving and taking it to the non-calmness. Or
sure.
Because since there is a test of awakened moment or state, and such disturbing experience touch you and shaking your that calmness, there is a inherent desire of emerging it and wanting to go in that state again. That desire is the, so we again trying to control the situation. Again, matlab, there is some element of ego emerging and trying to control the presence, and we are not accepting, as you rightly told, the divine play is actually playing and we are not accepting the present moment as it is. And that's why you are still wanting the past experience to come in present, and there is a flip-flop which is happening, and then we don't see the thing as it is probably.
Very true. Yet at the same time, why is there this desire for peace and calm? Because we know deep down it is our natural state. Yes, Siddhan?
I'm finding this flip-flopping quite frustrating personally, and I think it's
more flipping and less flopping like that.
It's both, I think. I don't know. But Yeah, because I feel like I, you know, have my peace for a bit, then I get carried away in the next weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's like a little bit of guilt after that because...
Of course.
Because deep down you know that, okay, you know, there's a better way out there. And so I don't know what it is. I don't know if I'm like, if it's the environment that sort of dictates that, if that's how it's supposed to be, it's destiny. Are those my choices? I really don't know, but I... also feel like you said, right, like there will be deliverance at some point. So I don't know if that's a function of time, effort, or just grace. So that is like sort of something I've been thinking about because I feel like I'm a victim of that process.
We all are, actually. We all are, because we want to get somewhere and we are not there. We want to get to that point. And it's frustrating, and especially if your environment is constantly challenging you and triggering you. And you find that out of five triggers, maybe two or three you're okay, and then the fourth and fifth, you get triggered. And you're back to square one. Deliverance is a matter of destiny, which you don't know, I don't know. The teaching comes in as grace. The flip-flop you have to see, is it especially happening with certain people only in your life? Or by and large, you have to look at that. That by and large, if I find that a stranger who comes in front of me, I meet someone over coffee or whatever, I'm not judging that person. I'm so open to how the person is. So by and large, I'm seeing people through this new dimension, this new way of being. But the old people in my life are the ones who are disturbing my peace. That much analysis, if you do for yourself, you will know where you stand in relation first to relationships in general. But if you find someone I don't even know, someone I meet at a party, I'm still judging them, labeling them and all that, you see, that only you will know. First, you conclude that where is my peace being disturbed? Is it by past relationships which are constantly threatening my peace and disturbing it? Or still I am exactly what I was before the teaching? Once you conclude that and get your answer, then we can take it further. Like if you told me that there's a particular relationship or type of relationship which takes away my peace of mind, we can delve into that. But one thing is absolutely clear, and I don't mean it as an optimist would mean it. Because you see, the minute you have an optimist, you have a pessimist. Again, you are polarized. This teaching is no polarization. But what I do mean from the bottom of my heart, because not only my teacher said it, but I saw it, that if God has brought you here this far, why do you think he will drop you here? Because this much also God only brought you. You didn't do it yourself. You heard something, read something, came across something, and God brought you so far. He's not going to let go of your hand. That is why he would say, always consider your glass half full. So we have to trust that power, that force which at least delivered us this much peace of mind. There are people who don't have it. I know people in my own social circles who don't have it. So we can explore, if not today, whenever, specific relationships, specific instances where this happens, the peace is disturbed, the flip-flop is...
Because it's not always relationships, right? Like sometimes it can even be your activities, like, you know, which... from your previous conditioning, and they come up again, and then you sort of flip-flop between that.
That is also a relationship with an activity.
Yeah.
Everything is a relationship.
Yeah, but there's no one to blame, right? Like you have to look within, and you have to sort of, with relationships at least, you can, you know, say, okay, this person's this way, whatever, you know. But, because like you said, it's quite hard-coded in us, this conditioning, and it does... Yes. It comes up whether you think you've evolved or not, you know.
It does.
So I find that more frustrating than the relationships, because then I'm like internally feeling guilty and judging a little bit, you know, and that doesn't help either. So it's...
You're saying with this an activity.
Well, yeah, like for example, like going out on a weekend, you know, overdoing it a little bit and then... not feeling too good about that, and then, you know, and then thinking about, you know, peace of mind, and then knowing that, okay, peace of mind was an option, but I chose this, and, you know. I think it's personally Bombay, because Bombay sort of triggers that in you. Like in other places, you don't really feel this way.
So now you have Bombay to blame.
Yeah.
I didn't do it, it's Bombay. It doesn't happen in Sikkim. It doesn't happen in Dharamshala.
It would never happen in Tirur, right? Like,
you know, I know someone who used to move from community to community. He was not one to live in cities. It disturbed him, the dynamics of relationships in cities, the pollution, the population, and so on. But I found that every place he moved to, an ashram in the north, then after 5 years, an ashram in the south, then one of these communal centers, which are very famous. Every 5 years, he was disillusioned by these places. And now he doesn't know where to go, because one is deriving one's peace from something external. And then when I realize that it's not suiting me, human beings are the same everywhere, blah, 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 I feel I don't belong there anymore. I was trying to find peace outside. So the Bombay is not outside. Yes, obviously any dense urban center, especially where you've grown up, there's hardwired conditioning at play. No doubt about it. And that's why people leave such places. In the pandemic, they have gone settled in Bangalore, Goa, wherever, Alibag. And they're living a better life. No doubt. But the person on the journey, on the spiritual path, has to come to the understanding and realization that the Bombay is within. My peace has to be found where I stand. That is why Goldsmith said, "The kingdom of God is within me, and where I stand is on holy ground when I contemplate the presence and power of God within me." Not outside, not up there. And what is that kingdom of God within me? My pure being, Bombay or no Bombay. So I may definitely be peaceful running away from Bombay, no doubt about it. But I have to find my peace when I'm in Bombay too. Once I find that, I can leave it, because that is now inside me.
Just feels harder though.
Like, because wherever we are running away from, the fact is we are running away from ourselves.
Yeah.
All ashrams are inside us. They are not escape routes. No, but it like, is harder.
A lot of great sages and saints like left where they were from to move somewhere where they, you know, could feel more settled. And like, say for example, in Ramana Maharishi's case as well, right? Like he left from his hometown and went to Tiru, and also like lived in solitude for a bit. So didn't all that like help his being more sort of steady? And like, isn't that like a journey in itself?
Of course, that was his destiny, to leave at that young age and run away from the town and go to Arunachala, the mountain. No doubt about it. But then what about the sages who have been in crowded places?
I don't know how that works.
Nisargadatta Maharaj was in Khetwadi, if you please. Ramesh Balsekar, Gamandia Road. Siddha Rameshwar Maharaj, Nisargadatta Maharaj's guru, was traveling place to place for satsangs with people, hundreds of people. One can be established in peace and have a preference to be in a hill station or in an ashram somewhere. But if you feel that running away from this, you're going to find your peace in a physical location, there's no guarantee of that.
Find peace where you are.
And poor Sai Baba, for that matter, what about his life? Came out of nowhere, and then thousands of people came to him. Where will he run? Ramana Maharshi used to sleep with his devotees in the same room. Where was his peace of mind then? It was within. So you may not live in Bombay, but then a whole city can be built around you. What are you going to do as a sage? But they didn't mind. That was their destiny. But yes, you're right. Places like Bombay are more difficult to navigate because they are dense. They are dense with thinking minds and our conditioning. You see, when we go to a new place or an ashram, it's fresh. Those old dynamics are not playing anymore. That's the beauty of it. And that is why it is also important to step out, because we are now more open. We are open to see, receive, and understand. Maharaj had left Bombay. He left his family and was wandering in the north. till he met someone and said, "You please go back. This is not going to help." And he came back to Bombay.
What about that concept that go where, you know, where it feels like home? But I know home is within, deep down, then yeah.
Go where it feels like home. If you have identified a place, go and try it out. No harm. If you're trying to go away from people who've been troubling you, do it.
No, I don't even think it's escape. I think it's more about like finding, you know, what feels right for you.
Sure, do it. You must do it if you feel that way. Like if you feel what feels right for me is to go somewhere, whether it happens or not is God's will. Whether you find your peace there or not is God's will. But if you feel motivated enough to do it, you should do it. Then when you found your peace, tell us, we'll all come.
Or I'll come back.
The point is this, we all have a measure now, which is peace of mind. When this Sufi mystic Bhai Sahib, he was talking to someone about his Guru's Samadhi. Bhai Sahib was in Kanpur, his Guru's Samadhi was 5 hours away from there. And the person asked him, "What do you feel when you go to your Guru's Samadhi?" And his only statement was that there's such a tremendous atmosphere of peace there that you can feel it. Nothing else. He didn't say that you feel your Kundalini shooting up or you feel this vibration, that, nothing. Highest Sufi master, Naqshbandi master, highest level, his Guru, he said, you go there and you see the sense of peace. Bas. And I've been talking about this since I started talking. This teaching will only point to peace. If you're looking for other things, then this teaching will not give it. But as Maharaj said once, a foreigner came into his attic, stepped in and left in 10 minutes. And he told his satsang, too late. He's already stepped in. At some point or the other, the seed will sprout.
Thing you mentioned about deliverance, and you said it's destiny and it's not necessarily earnestness or time. So would that like be a definite statement to say or to make?
It could be seen various ways. You see, now I remember in my teacher's satsang, someone came with this question of schizophrenia. Like a person who's schizophrenic and comes across the teaching, what is the guarantee that deliverance will happen? And he said, there's no guarantee. If the brain is wired in such a way that the person will never be at peace, the deliverance may not happen in this lifetime. We don't know. But is that worrying you, that it may not happen?
Not really, but just you want it to happen fast, right?
I agree completely, absolutely. Which is so beautiful because you know that this is what I truly want. So you want it to happen fast. But you can smile and say, now I also know that it will happen when it's meant to happen. Even though I want it to happen fast and I can try my best. Then you don't put that pressure on your shoulders.
Yeah, but even earnestness is not a metric, right?
It's a very big word you used. Maharaj was very fond of this word, earnestness. Earnestness changes things. But what is it pointing to? The outcome is not as important as the earnestness. So just be earnest in your endeavor.